I'm Trudy Kerr, and welcome to The Interviewer. In this series, I talk to artists, campaigners, men and women of influence, musicians, performers, sportsmen and women, politicians, businessmen and women, and anyone who shapes the fabric of our society. This is the last in The Interviewer Season 2. With 74 shows to date, it's time to take a small break before coming back with a very exciting new season in September. And a very exciting brand new show as well. New channels, new show, and a whole load more. All of those details will be coming out on the Facebook page, The Interviewer, and subscribe to the YouTube channel, The Interviewer, to make sure you don't miss anything. But to finish season two, I decided to play with fire. And I've got two guests on the show with one theme. My first guest is the managing director of CC Bill EU and CC Bill SRB, which are pretty irrelevant, to be quite honest with you, because I know Adrian Camilleri as the crazy guy who runs up and down the bitching hill at the back of Gargour just for fun. I recently spotted Adrian doing this, drenched in sweat, and he tells me that he's training for an event in Lofoten, Norway. I've probably pronounced that wrong, and I'm sure he'll correct me. I ask him to come on the show, and a few weeks later, he messages me in the middle of the night to tell me that he's dropped out of this ultra with a DNF. Did not finish. Did I still want him on the show, he asks. Yes, I said, and I'll explain exactly why in a minute. But in the same week, I presented the Challenge Malta Triathlon. And as one man crossed the finish line, everyone went crazy around me. This was the first Maltese man to finish the race. I, on the other hand, went crazy because Yosef Bonavia was winning his categories wearing a pair of aviator Ray-Ban sunglasses. When I asked Yosef about his current winning streak, he told me that it wasn't so long ago that he smoked like a chimney and drank like a fish. And that, to me, seemed like a good theme for a show. So I wanted these guys to team up to explain their passion for their relative sport, not from an elite perspective, but from a real human perspective and making success relatable. I'm so glad you guys are here, Adrian.
Thank you.
And Yosef.
Thank you.
And Yosef, you actually do have glasses with you, don't you?
Yes.
Show me
the glasses.
You're welcome to put them on if you want. It's really good to have you here. And I'm going to start, Adrian, because you're a bit of a talker. I'm going to start with Yosef. Your discipline is triathlon, is Ironman. So what is that?
Ironman is a 3.8 kilometer swim, 180 kilometer bike, and 42k kilometer marathon run. You have to do it all on one go. Some people just do it for fun to finish the race, so they done an Ironman. Some people do it for time. Some people do it to win age groups and get overall and the highest position age group. Myself, I compete as an age group, not as a pro.
Okay. But why do you do it?
I don't know why and how it all started. But I have a story how it all started.
Well, we're going to come to how it all started because I'm intrigued. I'm absolutely intrigued. But before we get to how it all started, how many of these have you done? Because I saw that recently you're in Belgium and you're in Dubai. It seems that you're doing this quite often, and it seems like you're doing them quite often all over the world.
Yes, I travel all around the world. I have done 36 up till now, 36 half Ironmans and 12 full Ironmans up till now. That's in a span of around six years.
36 half and 12 full, and you still don't know why you're doing it?
No. But I really like the sport, and I really like competing. I had bad races, I had really good ones. I won age groups, I qualified for world championship. For half Ironman, I qualified about 6-7 times for the world championship, but I only been once, which was in South Africa, about 4 years ago. And at last, my goal when I started triathlon, it was a dream to qualify for the world championship, the Ironman World Championships, which is held in Kona every year. And after really hard training and years training for this, last year I managed to qualify twice actually, and two races. And the problem is it got cancelled four times.
Oh my gosh. Because of COVID?
Because of COVID. But this year is going to happen, hopefully, in October.
Fantastic. Look at you, you've got a big smile on your face.
Yes, but you said it was, I've been dreaming of that moment. I don't know.
So that was your goal. You went into to an Ironman saying, I want to go to the World Championships. But you just mentioned there's a story about how you got into it. How did you get into this?
Sports, I started, when I was young, I was really into sports. I used to play soccer, but then I had to stop because I started work with my father, which was our own business. I had to stop that because games, they were on Saturday, and I had to wash cars and everything. So I had to, then I started with BMX, which is was a lot of, which was very flexible, so I could train anytime.
Actually, BMX as in the bikes?
Because it's an individual sport. Then when I was 18, I started going out and started smoking, everything. Like every teenager does, actually. But I went to the next level on that, in that area. I used to work long hours also, and I was a big cane smoker. I used to smoke about 5-6 packets a day.
Sorry, what?
5-6 packets a day. It's crazy, but it's true.
I mean, listen, I was, with all due respect, I thought I was a heavy smoker. I used to smoke 30 a day. 5 or 6 packets a day? Wow, okay. Yeah. Wow, I mean, just, okay, you're going to tell me how, but I don't know about you, but that whole idea of you going from that to what you're doing now, how did you go from there?
Then I got married after, and I had a big accident when we moved to this new house. I fell more than 2 stories because it's high ceiling house, and it was a new house, and the railing did not arrive yet. You know, the Maltese way, it's coming, it's coming, coming. Always
been
delayed.
You say it, my
friend. So.
Absolutely.
So we just were after we came back from the honeymoon and we moved to this house. I woke up, my intention was to go to the bathroom, but I ended up going out the balcony and I fell more 2 stories straight into the street. And I don't know what happened actually. I ended up in hospital.
This is straight after your honeymoon?
Yeah, well, yeah, after a month and a half, something like that.
Yeah. It's nuts.
And I broke all my bones. I was about 5 months in a wheelchair. The first week it was bad actually, because I did not know if I was going to walk again or not. And that's it. Then actually I was lucky enough that I recovered quickly from all this. After 5-6 months I was walking again and back to work and everything.
So, sorry, hang on a second. How long ago is this?
That's going back, I got married 16 years ago, 16.
So it's not that long ago?
Yeah, 16 years
okay.
ago.
Okay, so you managed to get back to work?
Yes, I got back to work and started again working and drinking again and smoking, or even when I had the accident, I used to smoke, so, and drinking, of course.
So then how did you, from there, how, you've gone back into work,
yes,
and you've had
then,
this accident?
We had a daughter after 4 years, and I always wanted to slow down with work when I was 30 years old. And I remember we were passing this bicycle shop and I told my wife, stop me here right away. My daughter at the back just stopped me on the side and to enter this bike shop. I know the guy of the bike shop because I used to buy a lot when I was during the BMX days.
The BMX, right.
And he was surprised seeing me again, actually.
No doubt.
Yeah, he recognized me straight away. And I just, after just 15 minutes, I just bought this mountain bike. And I bought it, and the next day he delivered it to my home. And that weekend I invited friends to my house. four of my friends. We done a barbecue, started drinking, of course, and smoking also. And one of us saw this movie. It was the Camino, the way it was, the movie. They crossed the Camino de Santiago.
Okay, yeah.
They crossed Spain. And to do it by walk, it takes about 6-8 weeks or longer. It depends how fast you are. And we decided, while we were drinking, to do it by this bike, because they saw it. And these other three friends, they haven't bought a bike yet, so... And we decided to go. And the next 2 days we met, and we decided to book this trip.
You must have had a hangover, no?
Yes, yeah, oh, the hangover, everything, all of us with hangover, but we decided to do it. And everyone watched this movie, and everyone was interested to do it. And, okay, they bought the bike, and I went out with the bike to start training, because I haven't been on a bike about 12 years, exactly, because I stopped 18, and I was 30 at that time. And I went this Mosta uphill, and I just... uphill. It's not a hill, actually. These days I run it.
But at the time it was a mountain, right?
It is a huge mountain. It was like Everest, actually. I just went up this hill and turned left. It was only 5 minutes on the bike, maybe. And I fainted, and traffic stopped, and my friends started laughing at me, and... And the next day they were trying to tell me that I'm not fit enough, of course, to do this trip with them and everything. Even they were not that fit, but they were a lot fitter than me.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Because I fainted, my wife had to come for me and everything. Even she was going to take me to hospital, I was that bad.
Jeez.
Just only 5 minutes riding the bike, this. And from then, we had another friend of ours, he was a PE teacher. He told us, don't start that fast training for this. He told us, go running a bit. And then we went running, I bought this running shoes. And also, again, after 5 minutes, I fainted again.
This is the weirdest superhero origin story I've ever heard in my life.
It's brilliant.
And so, and then it took off, we started training. But every break with the bike or that, I used to have a cigarette or something. And
this is so Maltese. It's unreal, isn't it?
But even when we went to this Camino de Santiago, every stop or place we stopped to stamp the passport out of the Camino, I used to have a cigarette, and every stage we stopped, we used to drink every night, so we done all this Camino de Santiago, drinking and spotting everything. So, but we done it. And from that, it was about 900 kilometers, and we done it in 12 days.
Wow. Okay.
Well, no, these days I do it, I think, even 2-3 days, no, mind you this. But at that time, it was a huge achievement for me. And then I decided to apply for the Malta Half Marathon. And I started running. There was this person called Manfred, and he used to tell me what to do. Just he used to tell me basic training, because I only applied 2 months before. And the 2 nights before the marathon, I went out with friends, and I got heavily drunk, actually. The next day, on Saturday, my wife told me, don't go to do this half marathon. There are people from my work doing it, and you're not going to finish this one. And we told her, no, I do it, don't worry. And we started arguing, we had a fight, actually, about this. And I went, she drove me then, after a lot of arguments, I woke up on Saturday, and I went, of course, with the cigarette, even before everyone was doing the warm-up, and myself, I have photos of this, so...
And oh my God.
Just 7 minutes before the race, I lit up another cigarette, actually. And then the marathon, so I went all out in the first K. But I done it all, and I done it in 1 hour, 42 minutes.
That's pretty good.
And a lot of people told me...
That's amazing!
A lot of people told me it's a respectable time for the training you've done, because I only trade for this 1 month and a half or two, something like that, without a coach or anything.
Please tell me you lit up a cigarette at the finish line.
After, yes, of course. Okay. And it was a huge celebration after finishing 1:42, and after that was a late night.
Oh man!
And then after I took a month break of sports, of course, it was a huge achievement for me. And then I started running again, and there was the 5K series they do yearly, and I applied for that also, and I started from there. Then a friend of mine started with me running also, and he told me he's going to get a coach. And I remember, he's getting a coach, I will get one better than him. I went with this club and I got a coach, which was Fabio Spiteri. And I remember going the first session there, and I saw on his leg Iron Man. I thought this Iron Man, he was thin, and what is Iron Man? I did not tell him, actually. And even I went to the track session, the first session, with him, with the cigarette. He told me, what you're doing?
and
even the people started laughing. But I was running really fast, and after the session, I lit up another cigarette and whatever. But then when I got home, I saw this Iron Man tattoo. I checked what Iron Man is. And I was impressed how 3.8 kilometers swim, 180K bike, and 42K run. I said, it's impossible for myself to do it because of work and the time you need to train and everything. And then this after a month or two, he told me, why you should start triathlon. I said, I don't know how to swim. And I went to the swimming pool with swimming shorts, and I did not have everyone laughing also at me. And he told me, start swimming. I told him, I can't swim 25 meters, and I remember starting that bit. I couldn't even swim 25 meters. In about 3 weeks' time, I started swimming. The sprint triathlon was a 750-meter swim, 20K bike, and 5-kilometer run. At that time, I did not have a road bike also, so I went to buy it 2-3 weeks before this race. And I remember I came nearly last, but not last. That was important, but I did not came last. And I said, after that, of course, again celebrating after, and a huge hangover the next day. And I told my wife, I want to start winning these races. She told me, what, you just started, take it slowly. And I applied for the first half Ironman, because my coach back then told me, you should do a half Ironman. I told him, impossible for me to do it, from a sprint to... And then it was about January, something like that, 3 months before the race, and I applied for this half Ironman in Austria, I remember. And I bought this expensive bike, and it arrived about a month and a half before this race. And I remember the UPS delivery man, I was still with the cigarette in my hand. I was looking at this box. That time I spent on that bike about 6,000 euros, it was. I was looking at this box, and I said, I will quit smoking. That night we had a meal with friends, and I remember I had the last cigarette. Then the next day I just did not smoke at all. And I started from there. I went to this half Ironman, and from then onwards I started going crazy, actually.
And now you're 36, half Ironman, and seven full Ironman later.
Yeah, but to continue that year also, the first race was a really bad experience, actually. I done a really good race, but in the transition, someone took my running shoes and just threw it in the tent, and I couldn't find it, so I lost about 15 minutes of the race to find this bag. The volunteers were helping me, and I was actually happy that I finished my first half Ironman. In a certain way, I was disappointed also, because I lost 15 minutes. I done it about 5 hours 30, the first half Ironman.
And just as to put that in context, the cutoff, certainly for the race that I was Eight hours. So 5.5 hours is still a really...
These days I hold the second best time in Hawaii Man via Maltese. It's 4 hours then. I broke the record that day, but that day there was the other Maltese athlete who broke it also on that day.
You see, your story has raised more questions than it's answered. And we're going to come back to this common theme in just a second. But your story is absolutely brilliant. It's funny. It's fantastic. And I think we're both Adrian gobsmacked.
I want to light up a cigarette right now.
But I'm going to come to you, and then I'm going to come back and pull these two stories together, because Adrian, as I mentioned when I opened the show, I met you through running. You run up and down that bit, I call it Bitching Hill, the hill at the back of Gargur.
Gargur Agony Hill.
Yeah. I just call it Yo Bitching Hill. And I've seen you running up and down there, and you're, in the same way that Yosef has gone into to ultra events, these are huge sporting events, so do you. But your story is very, very different because you have always done sports. You've always been with a sporting background, and you've always been dedicated to sports, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Good Lord. I started sports when I was 12, 13 as a junior tennis player, which for a junior tennis player is actually rather old, considering my mother had just joined the Master Sports Club and fell in love with tennis and dragged me along for the ride. I couldn't stand it. Hated it. You know, when your parents want you to do something, you know, you rebel. But the following summer, I sort of caught the bug and went down there, played against the wall. I was an incredibly shy child. Forget the, you know, playful, boyish exterior.
I actually don't believe you, but anyway.
I was a very shy child. So I couldn't say boo to a goose. So all I was doing was playing against the wall by myself for 6 or 7 hours a day. Yeah, when I say I caught the bug, you know...
6 or 7 hours?
Yes, non-stop.
That's not catching the bug. That's a little bit compulsive, though.
Guilty.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes, it is. It was incredibly compulsive. But my game improved almost overnight.
Well, you'd hope so. It was 6 or 7 hours.
Yeah. So basically what happened was suddenly I went from being, who the hell is this guy, to, this guy's a very good player, let's play. And before you know it, you're on the national tennis team, you're traveling all over the place, you're playing tennis to represent Malta. It was wonderful. And from that, I parlayed all of that into a couple of years on the Pro Tour. Don't look at me with all those excited eyes. I was crap. I was okay. I mean, I think I got one or two ATP points. I had a very, very minor ranking. Nothing to write home about. But I used that to parlay into a tennis scholarship in America and got my degree and played tennis, traveling all over the US for that. Came back to Malta, and I'd had all of the joy of sports sort of sucked out of me. I played so much tennis. And when I came back to Malta, suddenly everybody was gunning for me. This is going to sound egotistical, but I'm going to say it anyway. At the time, I was the best player on the island. And so my sole job at the time was to be the guy that the up-and-comer beats to know that they're the best player. And I was like, there was no joy in that. There was no fun in that. So I stopped playing tennis. I always said, when I stop enjoying it, you know. And then I moved into another sport by complete accident. There was this very, very attractive woman who I was trying to date at the time.
I love the way that Yosef is going, yeah, I identify with that. He's going, I get that. That's fine.
And she said, oh, let's go and play squash. And of course, the tennis player in me was like, squash? That's just like tennis. This is going to be great. I'm going to kick her ass, you know, flex. I went on court and she beat the living bejesus out of me. And so suddenly I caught the bug. That was it. It was all squash all the time. Then my wife and I don't know, are you married?
Yes,
you've got kids, right?
Yes.
So you know this as well as I do. When you get married, your wife goes out, hangs out with her friends, and suddenly you inherit a whole bunch of new friends, the husbands, and you all hang out together, and you sort of, you know, sit there with a beer and go, all right, yeah?
Well, a lot of beer and cigarettes.
Yeah, beer and cigarettes, exactly. So I sort of inherited a whole bunch of new friends that came from my wife's side. Except these guys were really cool. And we wound up going to the Camino Hotel once a year, every year, just, you know, us with the kids. And one morning, this chap, Patrick, he said, come on, we're going for a swim run. Swim run? What the hell's a swim run? He goes, yeah, well, you just put on your shoes and we go for a jog and then we go for a swim. Okay. So we ran down to the Blue Lagoon and he jumped in the water. I'm like, hold on a minute, I've got to take my shoes off. He goes, no, you don't take your shoes off, you idiot. You jump in. Okay. Jumped in, swam across and back, and then ran to Santa Maria Bay, jumped in, swam across the bay, ran back to the hotel. And he gave us this look, so how was it? And I was like, this is great! It was one of the most exhilarating moments. I was like, oh my God, I think I found my new thing, you know, running, this is amazing. I loved every second of it. And since then, boom, it was just all running all the time. And I started running by myself. I found it a very meditative exercise, if you know what I mean.
But Yosef's goal is to win and to go to the World Championships.
Yeah, that's not mine.
Your goal when you were playing tennis was to be the best. Squash was to lose and impress the ladies in that regard. But you're now taking part in these extreme ultras. Is your goal to win these ultras? Tell me about the one that you've just been to in Norway.
Wound up in Lofoten in Norway. It's in the Arctic Circle, very far north. I think it's like the northernmost inhabited point in Europe.
Okay.
And it was a 100-miler, and I think I finished
about 164 kilometers.
4 kilometers, yeah. I did about 73, 74 before I DNF'd. I had stomach issues.
Do not finish?
Yeah. My buddy Patrice actually had to get rescued by a helicopter up in the mountains.
But if your goal isn't to win, what is the goal?
We're all going to die at some point. That's an awfully morbid way to start saying this. But I don't want to go to my grave with the thought that I didn't live my life to the fullest. I wake up every morning. I get up. There's a certain element of discipline to it because obviously you're running at 4 or 5 in the morning. But you're out there and you're breathing the fresh air. You're out there in nature. And the cherry on the cake is that I get to jump on a plane and go and fly to some of the most beautiful places in the world and experience nature in ways that you can only experience it when you're running it. You can't travel there by van. Most of the places I go to, you can't cycle to. You have to run. You have to climb up the mountain. That's where you get the views. When I was in Lofoten just now, I had one of the most exhilarating moments of my life. You know what it was? We came across a snowbank at the top of a mountain. And as we're running down the mountain, I noticed that the footprints ended in the snowbank. And I'm thinking to myself, right, I'm seeing people further down the mountain. How the hell did they get down there? And suddenly it dawned on me. I parked my ass into the snow and slid down. And my friend Patrice was telling me, actually, you could hear me go, wee! You know? Where else can you have those kind of experiences? How?
Because this is really interesting, because you guys both have very, very different stories, but you both have a quality of life aspect to it. And I'm going to come back to you in a second to find out where that point is where you chose that quality of life. But yours is very, very much about quality of life.
Yes. There's the opportunity for failure at any point. In fact, I dare say I failed just as much as I've succeeded, but that's never been a good excuse not to do it.
You don't mind that? It hasn't put you off?
Hell no. I think I told you before we actually started recording, literally within 48 hours of having DNF'd, I'd already signed up for my next race. There has to be the opportunity for failure in order for success to mean anything. So,
gentlemen, thank you so much for being on The Interviewer. Thank you so much for being so inspirational and sharing your stories on this podcast.
Cheers, Trudy.
Cheers, thanks.